Okay. Raf says he dropped. All right. Well, he's football's on, so he's probably dropped a pass there. But Jeff Francoeur, I wanted to mention that since I have a second. I love listening to him. That was a great interview that Bill did with Jeff Francoeur, breaking down what's got to happen with the Atlanta Braves, and they're going into Arizona. And next weekend, the Dodgers play Arizona. This is an interesting week of baseball coming up. The Dodgers are in Colorado for three. Then the Giants go into Colorado for three. And Colorado has won 7 out of 8 on the road, if you can believe that. So this is going to be an interesting week of baseball. Arizona is going to have something to say about this race as well. Bruce Jacobs joins us. Bruce, good morning.
Hi, Marty. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Raf said you dropped, so I figured you were looking at one of those passes from Garoppolo or something.
Yeah, I've got it all back on now.
Okay, very good. Well, good game last night. Look, 2-0. And you know something? I sort of missed the home run last night a little bit. It seemed like, come on, can't somebody hit one out?
Yeah, I mean, it's refreshing to know they can win, you know, that way. I mean, it was basically a bullpen game. You know, he didn't know how much you're going to get out of Wood. You know, 3 innings that he gave him was probably going to be the max, and he was great. And then 6 more guys, you know, for allowing a collective 5 hits against a really good hitting team. That was very inspirational. And, you know, it was mostly about the defense. You know, Duggar made a tremendous catch on the Solaire ball, and, of course, Crawford made 2 more great plays, and a nice crowd, too. It was 32,000. It looked like even more. You know, the crowd's been a little bit sporadic, but that was a good one.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something. This bullpen, you know, I don't like the bullpen games twice a week. I think it's too much. But I was just thinking, you know, you get 4 or 5 innings out of the starter in the playoff game, if, you know, maybe even 5 1/3, and now you start bringing in this bullpen. This bullpen has got depth. And look, they're going to win 100 games. You don't do that by accident. This bullpen is a tremendous strength for them going forward.
Yeah, I mean, so there's 6 guys there, and that doesn't include McGee, who hopefully can get past the oblique. You know, if, I don't know if you're a pitcher, that sounds especially, it's a bad injury for anybody. But you know, I think you have to figure he'll be there for the postseason. And then who knows? Maybe Duvall gets in there too. I mean, this guy really has lights out stuff. So it's a amazing development. You know, just typified by, you know, Littell. Littell gets in there. There's his first and third and nobody out, and he strikes out the side just on heat. You know, and then you get a whole different look when you get Garcia and Alvarez, and that's a big thing too when you're going through a bunch of relievers and, you know, different looks. And then Rogers comes in, and heaven knows what that means. And then Leon finishes it off. So it's an extremely good and important time for the bullpen, especially. I think John Shea's writing about how the Giants' rotation might stack up against some other teams in the postseason, and it is a little bit unsettling. But like as you've said many times, the bullpen is the key to so much, and man, they are really looking good there.
Yeah, and you need one guy. You need that one guy who, when you need to win a game, that one starting pitcher can be there, and you can go back through all the postseasons, and you can pick out the Verlanders, the Hershisers, the Koufaxes, the Gibsons, whoever you want to pick out.
Yeah.
And I think, I hate to say it, but I think it's Logan Webb and not Gausman. And he may be the guy. He's young enough. He's still throwing hard. He may be the one guy they can rely on when they've got to win a game.
Yeah, we've sort of hinted at that in the recent weeks, and I think it's really leading that way. One thing I love about Webb, you know, you don't always hear from these guys with the clubhouse access restricted, but when he does come on, he's a super bright guy. He's kind of funny. He's really comfortable with where he's at. You know, everybody's watching him now. The other teams are scouting him because, you know, he might be the guy that we face in the opener. Who knows at what point he'll be there somewhere. And you know, Gausman, that game he had against the Padres the other day, he said the ball was exploding out of his hand. You know, the game didn't go perfectly for him, but he was really happy with the split. So, you know, if I'm a Giants fan, I certainly wouldn't be upset if it is Gausman in the first big game they have. But I think right now Webb has an edge.
Yeah, if it is Gausman, you want that bullpen behind him, and you want to be ready, because if he's at 92 pitches, you know, at 4 2/3 or 5 1/3,
right,
you know, and which happens to him. You know, I wonder, Bruce, if the sticky stuff didn't affect him, because ever since that's been in effect, he's kind of been a little funky with that split.
Yeah, I think you know, all across baseball, people are wondering about that when somebody who's been snapping off, you know, incredible cutters and splits and who knows what, you know, for seasons on end, all of a sudden their numbers are down. You know, well, could that be it? I mean, I think the fact that, that Gausman feels his split is still there 100% is pretty encouraging. So who knows? That's all speculation, but it's certainly something worth considering.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And the other thing we just touched on, they're going to win 100 games. And, you know, you don't win 100 games by accident. And I said that to Art Howe when the A's won 100 games a couple of years in a row, Bobby Cox. Mm-hmm. When you win 100 games, you've done something right as a manager, and I think that's much in Kapler's favor.
Yeah, they could win 105. Who knows?
Yeah,
I mean, I really feel good for Kapler. I've always felt a little bit of sympathy toward him. I think he's a really good guy, but I don't think anybody could have expected the way this has all worked out. But his moves continue to work just routinely. It's like he's got some kind of magic touch, and he's a very big part of this.
Yeah, the 100 win mark for me is a big deal. To list all the managers who've been managing a team that won 100. There's not that many, believe it or not. And so it's an accomplishment for him. But two managers, and you wrote about this, and it was interesting. I started thinking about it. And they could match up in the playoffs, and that's Dusty Baker and Tony La Russa. The two oldest managers probably in baseball could be going at each other in the playoffs. How about that?
Yeah, I had that in the paper yesterday. That was a little note that I had looking ahead to that would be a divisional series matchup, assuming that Tampa Bay, you know, has the best record and plays against the wild card team. But the nice thing about for Dusty and La Russa, you know, these are not young guys, is that especially in the White Sox case, they're pretty much coasting to the finish. I mean, they've been dominating that division. You know, for all the doubts about Tony, I mean, he comes in. And look at the team that he's given. And then in midseason, he adds Luis Robert and Eloy Jimenez. I mean, it's crazy how good that team is. And, you know, Dusty, the Astros, those guys, you know, they've put the scandal way behind them. Whatever the fans, whatever grudges are held probably forever in some quarters, those guys are just damn good, period. And they show it. They showed it last year. They're showing it again. They're going to, what are they up by, about six on the A's? They're going to win that division and probably be able to get their pit rotation in shape without having to, you know, go crazy over the final weekend to clinch the division. And, you know, we all are huge fans of Dusty, and I'm just so glad that that he's going to be in the postseason once again, and you know, they'll be a huge threat.
Yeah, but it's going to be interesting to see these two manage the bullpen and manage the starters. Because let's face it, they're, you know, these are guys who managed and played at a period of time when the starter went 7 or 8, and if he didn't, there was a problem. So to see these two guys in today's game managing their starting pitching, for me, that is going to be fascinating.
Yeah, in Houston, there are a lot of question marks, you know, in the rotation and the bullpen. The guys are really erratic, and Dusty's kind of shuffling the cards sometimes. He's not sure what he's going to get. It's a little different with Tony. If his starters are intact, I mean, when you can go from Kimbrel to Hendricks, who's very reliable. You talk about having that guy. He's definitely that guy for them, even on a roster with Kimbrel on it. So that it's a little bit different. But and of course, you know, Tony's a guy who was a bullpen innovator and will always be remembered that way. And then Dusty's always been ripped for his pitching changes or not making changes or heaven knows what in the postseason, fair or foul on that. It's just a really great contrast, and you know, but the lineup matchups in that series. We talk about, you know, Correa and Alvarez and Altuve against, you know, Robert and Abreu and Andrew Vaughn, and that's going to be a hell of a series.
Yeah, this is good. This is very interesting to see how that plays out. Then, of course, you have Tampa Bay going against one of these wild card teams, which I'm kind of hoping. Well, we'll see what it is if it's Toronto or whatever, but you've got, you know, the opener. They'll tell you right off the bat, you know, this is what's going to happen, and you've got that going against perhaps Toronto, which is one of the big slugging teams. That's a fascinating one.
Yeah, I think Toronto would probably be the best representative to come out of the wild card scene. just with the great lineup, you know, Vladdy Guerrero story, but you know, Marcus Semien, unbelievable year for him. And just that whole lineup, and just a terrific story about being forced out of their home base in Toronto, finally being able to play there for the first time in many, many months. And they've had a little bit of a skid, but I just think that's we talked about the Yankees yesterday. They'd be a pretty good show too, but I'm kind of sympathetic to Toronto on that one.
Yeah, we'll see. Ryu went on the IL today. That's not good news for Toronto. Their pitching has just been suspect all year. They just haven't been able to get it together. So this is not a good time to have trouble. So we'll see if that hurts them at all. You know, I was thinking about this last night. You know, we're watching the Braves and the Giants play. How about the two first basemen, Freddie Freeman and Brandon Belt? I think we're seeing two of the elite first basemen in baseball right now. Now, he's not Abreu. They're not Joey Votto. But the two of them are outstanding first basemen.
Yeah, they're not Marv Thornberry over there defensively. I mean,
no, they're not. Not Bill Buckner either. Yes.
I mean, no, they're two of the best. I mean, they're two of the best of modern times, really. I mean, Belt is so good over there. We always talk about the accuracy of his throws when there's a base runner hitting to second, and how difficult that is. It's such a simple thing, but it's also so complex and precise, and he'll make the diving stab when you need it. And, you know, his power has been fantastic this season. And he's come into a little bit of focus with the joke about being the captain. But, you know, I mean, you still have to go out there and show that you still got it. I mean, you don't have to show that you should literally be the captain. But you got to be a presence out there. And he's absolutely that. And Freeman's just wonderful. Kruk and Kipe had a lot of fun. He had one of the great swings of all time last night. He was completely fooled, and he wound up like just trying to drill it like straight down. And literally, he just hammered it into the ground. And Kipe goes, "This like he's playing a different sport."
I saw that. It was crazy.
And all right, he got a huge kick out of it and made fun of himself. He's a wonderful, wonderful guy. These are two of the best guys in the game in every respect.
I'm going to ask you this. If you had to pick one for your team, now, of course, Belt gets hurt a little bit more than Freeman. If you had to pick one, who would you take?
Oh, I definitely take Freeman. I mean, nothing against Belt at all. Freeman's a little bit younger. He hits better for average.
Okay.
He hits to all fields. You know, he homers. He's just as good a guy. And you know, I think I'd give him the edge there. How about you?
I would go Belt.
Okay.
I would go Belt. Now, Freeman is fabulous, the picks he made yesterday, but Belt does the same thing. I just think Belt impacts an inning bigger than Freeman does. Now, Freeman's a great hitter. Yeah, I would take Belt, but I think it's a good question, and it's fun to see the two of them out there, I think. I think that's the point.
Yeah, that's been a really fun part of this series. Hell, you can't go wrong with either one of those guys.
No. What do you think of Machado and Tatis? You know, it's just been a matter of time. Of course, the Giants go into San Diego this week, and San Diego lost a heartbreaker to St. Louis. That Tyler O'Neill hit the two-run homer in the eighth inning off Pagan to win the game 3-2. But what do you think of Machado getting in Tatis's face and, you know, saying, hey, it's not about you. This is a team and all that stuff.
Yeah, that was pretty conspicuous, and I didn't see the manager getting in there. Some other players were intervening, but you know those are two pretty volatile guys, you know, and they really care like hell about what's going on. They don't like what's going on with the Padres, and I don't know what led up to it. I think, you know, Tatis was basically he threw his helmet and got angry about something. It wasn't like he was, you know, sloughing off on the bases or not hustling or gave up on a play for Machado to get on him that, you know, rudely and loudly. So I don't really know. It seemed like maybe Machado was overreacting considering that this is all on camera. But who knows what's behind it? I mean, these things happen routinely. They happen on great teams. They happen on terrible teams. And I don't know if you make a whole lot out of it.
Well, the Giants have six left with them, and you know they're off. So this is going to be another interesting week of Padres baseball to see what happens there. Hey, the Colorado Rockies. I don't know if you've noticed it, but they've won 7 of 8 on the road 7 of 8 on the road. And now this week, and we'll have Thomas Harding on the show later from MLB.com, who covers the Rockies. They get the Dodgers and the Giants at home this week. How about that?
Yeah, the road thing is just crazy. I mean, a couple of weeks ago we were talking, well, they're still 25 and 51 on the road.
Right.
After all that. Oh, my God, it's just a great baseball thing. You try to explain it, but you do know that they're extremely dangerous. Everybody talks about the strength of schedule. These guys have the toughest or the weakest schedule. That means absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. I mean, you say, well, okay, they got the Brewers. Well, what if the Brewers have wrapped it up and you're seeing their fifth, sixth, and seventh best starters? Meanwhile, you got Colorado in the dumps or Arizona, and they'll rake you two or three times and beat you. You cannot judge schedules with any reliability. And Colorado is going to be a good example, I think.
Yeah, this week is fascinating for me because the Giants went in there and just crushed Colorado the last time, and that never happened.
Yeah, they did.
And now they're sort of on a roll and winning 7 of 8 on the road, and that's not easy to do. You got to be playing good baseball. I don't care who you're playing. Whether it's the Phillies or the Nationals, whatever you're doing. So that's part of baseball this week. Hey, did you see the article by Jason Stark about the pitch clock?
I loved it. Really, really good. Very revealing.
Yeah, tell me your reaction to that.
Well, basically, you know, what he found with the pitch clock being used in the minors is the time of game and the pace of game, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but just an absolutely radical difference in the whole pace of game picture between last year and this year. The games are moving so much faster, and I thought it was great. You know, a couple of years ago I talked to some pitchers, mostly from the A's, about their experiences in the minors, where the pitch clocks has been there a long time, and they all said this is no big deal. You get used to it. The fans get used to it. It's not like they're counting down. You know, that might happen in the postseason, but you get used to it, you work a little faster, and you adjust, and, you know, they got to get the hitters to stay in the box, but, you know, we're a long way from this in the bigs. I think they'll look at it a little bit more, but I like the fact that the evidence in the minor leagues clearly shows that the games move faster, and nobody's, you know, some people are complaining. I mean, you know, there's always the argument that, you know, baseball doesn't have a clock. Some people are really deliberate, you know. Let them do that. Other guys like to work fast. They don't need a clock ever. But let it be. Let everyone live, you know, live the way they want to live the game and play the game. So, I don't know, but bottom line for me is I'm really intrigued by it. I wouldn't mind it at all, especially because I think guys would get used to it. And you know, the game would look a lot more like it did decades ago when they played two-hour, 20-minute games as a matter of course.
Yeah, and we haven't seen the stats yet on whether there are more strikeouts or less walks or more runs or less runs. But clearly the time has gone down, I think, 15 or 20 minutes
of
a game.
That's pretty dramatic.
Yeah, and it's also the pace of watching a pitcher get the ball and he's got to get rid of it in 15 seconds. And the hitter's got within 7 seconds on the pitcher's clock. He's got to be in the box ready to hit.
Yeah.
So
you know
there's
what?
No
15. I'm sorry. 15 seconds is enough. I'm sorry. That's enough.
Yeah.
Anybody
no
should be able to
around.
Deal with that. Yeah.
You know, there's no. It eliminates the walking around.
Yeah.
And the Mike Hargrove. Let me take my batting glove off. Let me put it back on.
Yeah.
Nomar, Garcia Parra, and all that stuff. It eliminates that, and I think that's good.
It is. You know, there's no reason for somebody to say that he's pondering the meaning of life while he's out there adjusting his wristbands for the sixth time in a row.
Oh, God. Very good one. That's a good one. Hey, Bob Lurie's ceremony, I know we talked about him a little bit yesterday, but the ceremony was really nice. He made a nice speech. And I Ronnie pointed out to me today, the professor, that of Peter McGowan and Bob Lurie, those are the only two non-playing personnel, so to speak, that are up on the Wall of Fame. So a nice honor for him. And he made a nice speech yesterday.
Oh, yeah. You know, just a class act. And, you know, the old left-hander got the ball up there on the pitch. Not on the fly, but this is not a young man. Just As we said yesterday, he's really a class act, and those are definitely two guys who should be up there. There's probably, you know, there's always going to be a case for Horace Stoneham in the big Hall of Fame, and you know he did most of his work with the New York Giants, but I don't know how Peter McGowan felt about him, but because he had so much influence. But you know, those are two guys that absolutely belong up there, and it was great to see, you know, people turn out for Bob, and people who remember him, you know, when he was running the club. And he, you know, the big thing for me with ownership is always write the checks, be generous, show good sense, but let your baseball people make the decisions.
Yep, you know, stay out of the way.
You're not George Steinbrenner. You're not Charlie Finley. Stay out of the way, and then he did that.
Yep, and he did it very well. And, of course, we talked about Speck Richardson, but he turned it around with Al Rosen and Roger Craig and let them run it. I mean, you know,
absolutely.
He always, as he said to me in the interview, he said, look, I always liked to know what they were doing, mm-hmm. but I never got in the way and told them not to do something.
Right, yeah. And you're lucky always to have, especially somebody like Al Rosen, that's, and Roger Craig. Good grief. Great guys there.
Did you see Peter Hartlob's article today in the Cron? About the Dome Stadium proposal in the 80s. Did you see that?
I saw it flash by me on Twitter this morning, and I saw the photo, and I immediately went right back to bed. I've got such a fever. If that had ever happened, I mean, you can't have a dome in California. You just can't. I mean, the Raiders have sort of one playing in Vegas because it's 1,000 degrees every day. But a dome in the Bay Area is just inconceivable. Just one of the worst ideas anyone could ever have.
Yeah, good story by Peter.
I'm looking forward to read it. Peter's always great. He's a tremendous researcher. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want a dome stadium here.
You
just don't want that problem. But it would have cost like $1 billion, and that was the end of it anyway.
Yeah, so at least it came cheaply.
Yeah, that was the end of it. A couple of things. One, Trey Turner. And I noticed this the other day. Someone mentioned, you know, he can lead the league in hitting, and he'd be the first player to lead the league in hitting playing with two different teams in the same league. And I said, well, who could the last one be? And it turned out to be one of our favorites, Harry the Hat Walker.
Oh, yeah.
And Phillies and Cardinals in 1947 led the National League in hitting. So he's one of our guys.
Absolutely. And, of course, Solly Hemus fell just short of that, I think, 17 years in a row. But but Trey Turner, I'll tell you, with all the shortstops that are coming up for free agency, you know, Seager and Correa and Baez, if you gave me Trey Turner, I'd say I'm not looking back. I'd totally take that guy. He runs like the wind. He's got great power. He's a great guy. He's a winner. And the Dodgers are very lucky. I mean, for them to get Scherzer and Trey Turner, it did cost them a very good young right-handed pitcher. His name escapes me right now. But
great, Josiah.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, well, tremendous addition there. For the Dodgers, if I'm a Dodger fan, I say somehow we got to keep Seager and Turner. I don't know if that'll happen, but good player.
He's got the smoothest slide in baseball.
Oh yeah, he's a dancer out there. He's really special.
Yeah, very good. So that Harry the Hat Walker would be, you have to go back to him. So I'm glad.
So what about Suitcase Simpson? If you're going to put a hat in there,
Harry Suitcase Simpson. He was on many teams, and he was not a bad ball player. George Brett, 1980, and this is a good one. Think of the date. This is September 19th. George Brett, 1980. It's two hits. He's hitting 400. It's the latest anyone had hit 400 since Ted Williams in 1941. I think Brett ended up at 390. But how about that, Bruce? On today's date, hitting 400.
Yeah, that was the first season I really got to cover ball extensively. And I remember a game in Oakland. It was in late September when he went 0-for-4 against Matt Keogh. And he was down below 395. You start to think, well, maybe this isn't going to happen. But I mean, the bottom line is this guy's flirting with 400. You know, deep into the season, he winds up at 390. I mean, I'll never forget one of the greatest things I've ever seen in baseball was the 1980 ALCS in Yankee Stadium. The Royals have already won the first two in a best of five. They're in Yankee Stadium, and Brett wins the game. It clinches the game with a three-run homer off Gossage into the upper deck. I mean, I still get the chills thinking about how what a moment that was. You know, the Royals had always been buried by the Yankees in the postseason. Brett just sort of single-handedly took it upon himself to hit one into the night off the most frightening relief pitcher ever. And in the locker room afterward, I'm in the Kansas City locker room, and Reggie Jackson comes in, and he goes right up to Brett, and he goes, "How do you hit 390, man? How do you do that?" And everybody was in awe of George Brett back then.
Boy, yeah, what a season. Boy, I wish you – I hope somebody hits 400. I really do. I don't know if that will ever happen, but I'd love to see it.
Well, John Lowe, one of the great baseball writers, had a note recently where – this could be the first year where the batting champion in both leagues is below 325. Mm. So the idea of a 400 hitter right now is a little I can't see anybody that would even come close to that. I really don't. There's a lot of really fine hitters, but it's just a different time. It's not that it couldn't happen. I mean, you bring up somebody like Rod Carew or Tony Gwynn, and you start thinking about it. We don't really have a guy like that right now, but I'm with you. I would love to see it. It'd be a great thing to follow. It'd be kind of refreshing after all the home run stuff.
Well, you'd have to have a whole different philosophy. You'd have to be willing to use the whole field, and no one is willing to do that. And that ends it right there, unless they change the shift rule. One other one, 1973, Davey Johnson, and I still don't know how he did it. Hit 43 home runs. 42 as a second baseman. He tied Rogers Hornsby. But Davey Johnson, nice little hitter, 15 home runs, 12 home runs, 43.
Yeah. Well, he'd just been traded to Atlanta, and they called that ballpark the launching pad back then. And he winds up Darrell Evans hit 41, and Hank Aaron hit 40. It was the first time he had three teammates with 40-plus. And Dusty was on that team. He had 20 or something home runs. And you had Aaron chasing Babe Ruth. He wound up just one short at 713, so it wasn't until the next season that he caught Ruth. But it was just all about the home runs that year in Atlanta, and somehow Dave Johnson got caught up in it. And, you know, the next year he probably went back to 15. But I really admired Dave Johnson. They've had this show about the 86 Mets on.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, the four-part series, 30 for 30, really worthwhile. And it's a wild bunch of guys and, you know, drugs and just Neanderthal kind of behavior. Plus, you know, the incredible class acts like Keith Hernandez and Ron Darling. And just a talk about a load to manage a team. Obviously, they were a great, great team. But Dave Johnson managed that team. And for all the problems that they had before and after, you know, Dave Johnson went into that spring training. He actually said, "We're going to dominate," and then they did. You know, not easy to manage all of those guys, and I think that's forever to his credit.
Yeah, and it's funny they got on him for dominating. He says, "What do you want me to say? I think we're better, and we're going to win." He's an interesting guy. He had issues in Cincinnati with Marge Schott, but the Dodgers. Yeah, good one. Hey, great to talk to you on this Sunday. Giants-Dodgers. Giants are going to win 100 before I talk to you again. And what a season. It marches on.
It marches on. And, you know, to think that October could be even better is pretty staggering. But it always turns out that way. So it's going to be great. And look forward to next weekend, Marty.
Absolutely. We need a good baseball column from you. I'm looking for that big baseball column.
Okay, I'll get off the lacrosse thing I'm working on right now.
Really? Tell Christina Carl. Big baseball column, it's due. All right. Have a good afternoon. Thanks, Bruce.
Thanks.
All right, more coming up on our show. Always great to talk to Bruce on Sunday morning. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Very interesting author coming up next, Luke Eplin. Wrote a book called Our Team. It's the epic story of four men in the World Series that changed baseball. And we're talking about Bill Veeck, Satchel Paige, Larry Doby, and the Cleveland Indians. And I think you're going to enjoy it. Okay, more coming up, KMBR 6.